Hi, my name is Vanessa Vallalee and I'm founder and CEO of We Are Tech Women. It gives me great pleasure to introduce you to season 3 of She Talks Tech, the We Are Tech Women podcast. What a season we've got lined up for you. Over 20 episodes talking all things tech from the front to the back of the industry. We've created this podcast for you to keep you informed, to keep you insightful, and to keep you motivated in your tech career. I hope you enjoy it. Today we hear from June Sarpong OBE, TV presenter, diversity expert, and award-winning author. June has worked extensively with His Royal Highness Prince Charles as an ambassador for the Prince's Trust. June was awarded an MBE in 2007 for her services to broadcasting and charity, making her one of the youngest people ever to receive an MBE. June was later awarded an OBE in the 2020 New Year's Honours List. In this episode, June shares outstanding advice on how to be resilient in your career, how companies need to be more inclusive and nurture their diverse talent pools, and why it's so important that we all step up and be role models to future generations. I talked to June about the focus of intersectionality, male allyship, and why building an inclusive culture should be at the forefront of any company's agenda. So just to give everyone who's watching a little bit of background, if you don't already know June, you should. But June has enjoyed a 20-year career in which she's become one of the most recognisable faces of British television. June began her career at KIS 100 and later became a presenter for MTV UK and Ireland. It was when she started on Channel 4 T4 that she became a household name. June hosted 2005's Make Poverty History event and presented the UK leg of Live Earth in 2007. I could go on and on about June's accolades, being awarded a MBE, being awarded a OBE, being the author of 3 award-winning books, Diversify, 6 Degrees of Integration, The Power of Women and The Power of Privilege. Do go and look her up. June, I could have talked forever, obviously, but we're going to cover some of it in the interview, but a huge welcome.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you. Like I said, I'm excited.
So obviously we're talking to a huge global audience of tech women, so we're going to touch on a little bit of technology. Yeah. So from my perspective and things that I see every day, there are many different barriers that women in tech face. There are only 17% of women in tech, 16% globally. And as we both know, many of them don't reach senior levels fast enough or get the visibility they need. What's your advice around staying in an industry with the fear that you might never succeed in it?
Well, I think the thing is, Vanessa, as we know, nothing stays the same forever. And you know, with the way you were able to break barriers in your career in finance and what you've been able to do for women in the workplace in general, even if it seems as if something is impenetrable and cannot be changed, it never stays that way. So maybe at that moment, it can't be changed. I will be honest. I've been in my industry, the media industry, I've been in it for over 20 years. 10 years ago, the things that I'm seeing happening now could never have happened then. So what I say to women who feel that they are in an industry that will not change, if they are genuinely passionate about the industry, stick with it. I mean, if you're not, then, you know, who needs the stress? But if you are genuinely passionate about the industry, stick with it and be an agent of change yourself within the industry, because eventually it will. Has to.
It's true. Sometimes we need to kind of push ourselves, take a little bit of risk and be that change.
Yeah.
Because we need other people to see us as role models so that they can follow in our footsteps.
Totally.
So around kind of the issue of diversity, when I look at the top levels of organisations, I still see people that look and sound the same. Hmm. How do we address that?
Well, I think the thing is, at least for the first time, we are acknowledging it, Vanessa. For many years, we were gaslighting people as if there was nothing, that was not in any way somewhat strange, that only a small percentage of people tended to sort of fulfill their potential. And I think that at least now we are acknowledging it. And that acknowledgement is a first step, because from there we can then start looking at the solutions. But when you're not even acknowledging the problem exists, that's when we have real, real issues. And I would say that you need to design change. It's not going to happen on its own. So you need programs that nurture and develop diverse talent. You need to make sure you've got a timeline in which you want that diverse talent to succeed by, and to be constantly monitoring and measuring your success. So if your approach isn't working, then you can modify it. But I mean, if you're not doing that, it's hard to know whether or not you're actually moving in the right direction. And I think you need to be monitoring on a regular basis. An annual basis isn't enough. You need to probably be doing it on a quarterly basis.
So how did we reach that diverse talent pool? So you and I both went to school in East London, right?
Yeah.
We know that Tough Cookies come from East London, and there's a huge...
The best!
You know, not just the East, the South, the North, and the West. There's a huge talent pool of kids that are there at the moment. And companies are kind of reaching in to try and access that talent pool. But sometimes I don't believe it's being done in the right way, because when those kids make the transition, and I liken my own experience at 16 into those environments, I still didn't feel included.
Oh.
How do we reach that talent pool, June, in the right way and carve pathways so that those kids will go on to succeed?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, you and I have spoken about this at length. One of the big issues is what you described, in that, yes, you go and reach the talent. Yes, you give them an opportunity, but you haven't changed your culture. So they know they don't belong, and they are made to feel less than in your environment, which means that they are constantly questioning themselves and actually can't give you their best. So what I would say to a lot of companies and leaders is really look at your culture. And the best way to know what your culture is look at the people who have risen within it. So not even the people who are senior that you got from the outside. Look at the people who've been able to grow within the organization. That tells you your culture, because that tells you the kind of person that succeeds in your environment. And if it is predominantly one type of person, then that means that that culture needs looking at. And I would say that before you go and bring in any diverse talent, have honest conversations with your workforce about unconscious bias, conversations around inequality, and also have conversations about re-looking at the metrics that we use to define success. Because as you say, Vanessa, you and I, as the East London girls, we know the resilience of the people we grew up with. We know how much business is missing out on in not going to nurture and develop that talent. And I think that if people understand ability in different ways. Ability isn't just a good grade from a prestigious university. Ability is also the resilience to come from a tough background and somehow even manage to get to one of those companies. That in itself means that that person has that extra oomph that you need in your business. And actually valuing that and understanding that, I believe, will really make a big difference.
I think there's a whole new skill set that companies should be looking for. Yes. The entrepreneurialism that comes out of some of these kids, as you're quite right, the resilience side of it, the fact that we just constantly innovate in order to survive in some circumstances, it is such a lucrative skill set.
It is.
And you're quite right about the culture, because it's all well and good going recruiting. And I hate to watch people that do things for aesthetics, but you go and recruit all these kids, and then, as you say, they get in there and they don't feel included, you know, or there's a lack of role models above them for them to aspire to. It just, for me, the journey just kind of widens. So some great advice there.
Yeah.
I want to keep on that, talk about kind of women. At the moment, the last couple of years, we've seen that, and very much welcomed as well, shift across to intersectionality. Mm-hmm. So it's all well and good just being a woman. We've got our own share of challenges. But what happens if you're a Black woman? What happens if you're a Black woman that identifies in a different way? There are so many different intersections. Mm. In order for companies to be inclusive, they need to make sure that they're looking for those different things.
Yeah.
You know, what's your thoughts around that?
Well, I completely agree. I think they need to make sure they also understand those different things and what those different things bring and what challenges too, and also what benefits as well. Because the problem is often with this conversation, sometimes we talk about it way too much in a sort of negative way. But actually, no, let's also look at the benefits and let's change what we see as a risk instead to an opportunity. And what I often say to leaders and those that have more agency in society, and at the moment with the current balance that we have now, that's predominantly white men, is I say it's important to understand the hierarchy of inclusion in society. And we know that elite privileged white men sit at the top and then you work your way down for everybody else. And so when you know what that is, you understand where somebody is on that ladder and the kind of rejection that they face in society on a daily basis. And I think that when, again, you have that awareness of the different lived experiences people have, your decision-making changes. And again, the way you value people changes too.
I think also these companies can't just put everyone in a box. I don't think that box exists. I don't think it has ever existed. No. You know, we're all made up of so many different parts. So talking of men, what about male allies? Obviously, from my perspective, we need the men on the journey, and there are plenty of men out there campaigning for gender balance, and we see them and we applaud them. How can men do that? How can men extend their hand in terms of being that ally and also sponsoring women and advocating for us when we're not in the room?
Yeah, well, I think you're totally right. And I think the other thing that they need is role models. We're always talking about role models for women, role models for people of color, people with disabilities, diverse talent, blah, blah, blah. Actually, white men need role models, need examples of what inclusive leadership looks like. And I think that when we see those leaders that are doing it right, we need to celebrate them and champion them. So those that aren't doing it right know what actually the standard is and what the expectation is. And I think that we need more examples of, and I think that where we see them, we need to highlight them and then encourage them, because many are in meetings and rooms that perhaps we're not in. And actually, they then become champions with their own peer group. So I think male allyship is absolutely important, but actually role models for themselves also really matters.
And I think you raise a very good point there, because there's the assumption that these male allies would know how to sponsor women.
They don't know. A lot of them don't know. I'm sure you're asked all the time. I'm always asked. I want to help. I don't know how to. And I don't want to say the wrong thing and get it wrong. And the other thing as well is, and I think sometimes as women, we sometimes forget this, is that particularly for sort of captains of industry and people who are incredibly successful in the top of their game, they are usually the last person everyone turns to for advice. They are the final word. And when I mean last person, I mean in a good way, as in they are the final word because they are the boss. So they are likely to know. But on this subject, they don't know. And I think that's very hard for people who've always been the go-to to also acknowledge that maybe they don't know. And I think we also need to have a bit of compassion for that as well.
Oh, absolutely. But I think there should be a self-awareness from any leader in that position that we're on this constant road of learning, right? And we're never done. It's never the finished article. So from a leader's perspective, I'd hope that the leaders that are watching this are looking inward at themselves and saying, okay, what lenses do I need to look through? Yeah. What are the different things that I need to do? Because to me, that's the best kind of leader, the self-aware, the one that's constantly evolving and in terms of their skill set, and taking notes of the people around them and responding to the needs of their people as well.
Yeah.
So on technology, back to technology, how do you think technology can help with inclusion? We see these things about AI and these horror stories about, you know, facial recognition and stuff like that, not recognizing people, different skin tones. And there's all this bad behavior built into some of the systems that we've got that will only propagate what we've been seeing for years. And again, there's an acknowledgement around that and where everyone's kind of looking at it, say, with a different lens. But how can technology help us to achieve more inclusivity?
Well, I think technology has shown us just what an asset it can be. You know, if ever there was a demonstration, without technology, we would not have survived this COVID crisis, which is why the impact of the Spanish flu was so much worse, because there wasn't the kinds of technologies that allowed people to be able to still work remotely, and all that wasn't available then. So I think that we know technology can be a force for good. And I think that we now need to encourage those that create technology to really understand the value in diversity. We know that there are issues around having enough women in STEM in the first place. So we have to actually create the pipeline. Pipeline itself doesn't really exist. We know the same applies when it comes to Black talent. we're way further ahead, obviously, on Asian talent in technology. And I think that there are sort of learnings to be had there in terms of for Africa, even because Africa is on the rise. Are we ensuring that enough of those young people are trained in technology and have the skills for the jobs of the future too? But that doesn't mean you can't have diverse voices in the room when these technologies are being created, diverse voices who might not be technologists themselves. In the interim, until we have the talent with the tech skills, let's also make sure we're at least bringing other experts who can consider these things so that when this technology is being created, it's being created with everyone in mind.
Yeah. I mean, there was a great book, and we had her as a guest at our conference a couple of years back, Caroline Corrado Perez, that wrote
Women.
Yeah, I love her too. You know, just some of the stats in her book, and I know she's got a new book coming out later in the year, was incredible. Just the things that we take for granted that just were clearly designed for men and not for women.
Yeah, so, belts and goodness knows what else, yeah.
So there's a lot of ladies that we watch in the conference, and I absolutely encourage them to think about that product design. How do you get in the room? To June's point, you may not have the technical skill, but you're going to give a different diversity lens to how
And you're probably going to be using the product too.
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, I don't know about you, June, but I quite fancy a life support system that keeps me alive that's built.
I love that. Yeah. Hopefully we don't need it anytime soon. No, but, you know, if we ever do, we want it to be able to work for us as well.
So let's talk about what women can do for themselves. So I'm a true believer. It's all well and good. You know, we could sit there, wait for our companies to go, you're working really hard. Here's a big pay rise. Here's a fancy job title. But I think, you know, if we sit and wait for that to happen, we might be quite old. So what can we do for ourselves? I mean, how have you pushed yourself forward in your career? Where did you take risks? And do you ever feel like an imposter? Because that comes up always, all the time.
Always feel like an imposter. I don't think that ever leaves you, actually. I think you've been raised with it. So all we can hope is we raise our daughters not to feel the same way. But I think if you've been raised with it, it's hard not to. There's always going to be that doubt, that moment where you're in a room and you're like, do I really belong? You know, all of that. I don't think that particularly leaves you. But you get better at pushing through it and not letting it cripple you and not letting it prevent you from doing whatever you have to do. And then the other thing I would say in addition to that is I think each time you're able to achieve something that you didn't think you could, that builds your confidence. And that's why I think for parents, it's really important to let your children take risks and let your children fail, because let them fail and get used to sort of picking themselves back up and getting on with it again. It's all about the resilience that we were talking about. So I think each little milestone where you're like, oh, wow, I didn't think I could do that, but wow, I've done it. Okay, bring on the next thing.
I agree with the parenting thing. It's always hard to watch your child be disappointed, you know, they didn't get in the netball team, or, you know, and I've had many of them with my own kids. And as much as mum's sitting in the background going, oh, I just want to fix it. Yeah. You're quite right. They have to have that resilience to go, do you know what? That didn't go my way. So I've got to try another way. And I think that's something that we face a lot as women, as thinking about those other ways. It's not necessarily linear.
My goodness, that's so important, Vanessa, to get that point across. It's not always linear. Sometimes it's zigzag. And actually, often when it's zigzag, the end goal is better. In the end, the sort of the end destination point of a zigzag career, I believe, is much more interesting than that of a linear career.
And you learn more along the way, because you get your mistakes and you get up and you dust your knees off, you know. And one of the things we advocate at We Are Tech Women is around that building of your network, because when you do fall over and scrape your knees, you've got wonderful women around you, or your partners, or whoever it is, to give you that moment to go, come on, get up, we've got this, there's going to be another way.
Yeah.
So before I let you go, and we're going to end on just a couple of top tips, just quickly tell me about the books. I mean, I've got them, I've read them, they're incredible. So if you want to pick just one of the three, what's the one that you want to talk about?
Well, if I could do two, if that's okay.
Do two.
Obviously,
it's show, Jude. It's your show.
The Power of Women, I think, is a great book for any woman to read. And it's a short, easy book too. But I think Power of Privilege very much is a handbook for now. And that's how white people can challenge racism. So for anybody who wants to be an ally, who wants to be a true champion of change. I think that book is very helpful and it's very prescriptive in terms of what you can do.
Absolutely. So you can get that on Amazon. Fantastic. All of June's books.
Waterstones and Tesco's. Tesco's sell my book, which is very
in the UK. You can
In the UK.
So finally, June, just our ladies, they're peachy keen on their careers. If you had to give just a few tips to leave them with around how they can ace their own careers, what would it be?
Very good question. I think tips on how to ace your own career is... one, practice liking yourself. I think liking yourself is probably one of the best things you can do for your career because it colors everything in terms of how you are in an interview. Even if you really want a job, if you're kind of relaxed with yourself, you're not going to be full of nerves in an interview because you think, if I don't get it, it's not the end of the world. I'll get something else. So I think even aside from mapping your career and goal setting and all the other things that we're told we should do, I think start with liking yourself first. It will make everything that much easier.
June, I honestly can't thank you enough for being my guest on this episode of She Talks Tech. Such a huge supporter of all we do. We're very, very grateful. Thank you to all of you for listening. We really, really appreciate it. And don't forget to tune in every week for more of She Talks Tech. If you want to find out more about June, you can connect with her on LinkedIn. You can follow her on social media, Instagram and Twitter.